Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Today.
Brad, we can't stop snapping. Amazing episode for you guys as we are capping off the season of X-Men versus Avengers. Who won? You decide. We had War Machine to be able to recap with our thoughts here. And then we're going to roll into what we are looking at for next season. Me and Brad's top picks. And then the data mine, juicy, juicy data mine for what is to come after that. So this is our mega roadmap. As we recap the season, Brad, what did you think was the biggest winners and losers out of the season release here?
So this season we started with Hope Summers as the season pass card. We had
maybe the best card in the game.
Yeah,
she was definitely the winner.
I still think she should be once per turn.
Yes, same.
So yeah, I think she was easily the winner. If we go off of not the season pass card and exclude her, I would probably say it's kind of even across the board. Like they all have like their pros and cons. Like Pixie, I still think was the worst one in the entire month. The most fun one and like the most enjoyable one, and one that I think people have, you know, the most fun playing, right?
Yep.
Because she's that kind of deck. But by proxy being that kind of deck, you're going to be a bad deck. Sorry. Yeah. And I still stand by that the non Pixie version of Haivo is still the better version of Haivo, which we'll talk about that more in a bit as well. And then, of course, you know, what's his name? Cannonball is good. Mockingbird is very good. Probably the best card of the month outside of Hope.
Yeah.
Cause some rumblings of do we do some different things for Thanos or whatever? I saw, okay, Teddy, I saw an a suggestion on Twitter that someone replied to me with, because someone said that they should change Mockingbird or whatever. And I was like, and I retweeted, I just said, just make the stone star in your deck. I don't care. I don't care about Pixie.
Sure, yeah.
Someone said that they care about Loki, as in the opponent getting stones from you. And I was like, I don't think I care about that either.
No, no, no. If Loki hits stones, I don't think they're very happy.
Right. I think that's like the worst thing ever for Loki players.
It's, like, you it just depends. Like, it's if you played Loki on tempo on four and you got stones, you're okay. But Loki's board space is so premium, like that might still be bad. Yeah.
That and sometimes, because I know we've both played a decent amount of Loki, you're looking at like your matchup of what your opponent's doing. You're looking at your hand, you're like, I have my power cards. I have my my Devil Dino in hand, right?
Yeah.
I have my
trade those for stones.
Right.
And like Marvel.
Nothing feels worse when you take the gamble of like, I think I want to do what my opponent's doing and see if I can beat them there. And then you get the low roll of their deck when you had a high roll of your own deck.
Yeah, yeah. When you're playing against the combo deck and you get the low roll of like pieces that did not combo, that is always just brutal. Whether it's destroy or discard, especially discard right now, which is being so popular. Which I think is really interesting how much discard has stayed around even though it didn't get new toys explicitly this season.
Oh.
It's kind of the lag from last season, but it's doing really, really well.
We'll get to discard in a second.
Even through the nerfs of the
I blanked because I was starting to say what this person was suggesting. They said that they should change Mockingbird's text to costing one less for, you know, cards that discard your opponent didn't start your deck, but add the caveat of that you haven't drawn.
What?
So,
oh, okay. So if I draw the stone, it doesn't count.
Yeah. So like,
then,
if,
but
if
the card that I generated,
correct.
What if it was just like cards that are generated starting turn one, because the Thanos technically happens
prior to turn one.
Prior.
Yeah.
You could put some kind of.
You know what they could do easily? They could just pull a Loki collector thing and just not change the text on either card. Really.
Right.
They changed the text for Loki to transform, I guess. But
the core game mechanic now excludes this.
They could just say in an OTA, hey, Mockingbird says this. We understand for new players it might be a teeny bit confusing, but she no longer works with Thanos' stones.
Right.
Period. End of discussion.
They could just do that without even a text change. Exactly.
Keep
the card elegant.
We've talked about inelegance before, and I don't think that's the most inelegant thing, honestly.
No.
It's just kind of like,
people are used to it from any kind of even physical card games where they errata cards and like the card text is always the same, but you have to read the PDF of like, this is what it actually does in these specific scenarios.
Yu-Gi-Oh is awful about that. Magic almost never errata stuff because the problem that Yu-Gi-Oh has where you play like Goyo Guardian in Yu-Gi-Oh, where you used to be, it was a very strong synchro card, and it basically could just like imagine Stegron, but as a Yu-Gi-Oh card. It was very good in a sense. And they changed it to requiring a Earth tuner and an Earth monster to tree for it, where it was generic before. And people were trying to bring it out because they have old copies of it. And you're like, can't do that. They're like, but why? My card says this.
Yep. And they're, well, let me pull it up on my phone. There's a new version. Exactly. Keyforge was bad that way too. So yeah, I could see some alterations there. Looking at War Machine, I think War Machine is landing actually in a pretty sweet spot here. I'm very happy with him. I think he was overhyped.
He absolutely
was. Is it safe to say that? He was heralded as like this bringer of absolute destruction with the Infinite combo once that was allowed, which now that he's in my hands, at first I was like, oh, he should not work that way with Infinite, but now I'm like totally fine with it.
I was never against it from a gameplay perspective. Balancing, I'm still against it from a functionality perspective and a game mechanic perspective. I still find it to be clunky and not really great for the game in general.
Well, it's not cleanly defined as like, correct, what does his text mean? Like, there's people who are like asking, does he not care about energy costs? Because if he doesn't care about these play restrictions from hand, like,
okay, but
nothing stops you.
Let's be real, Teddy. Those people are kind of stupid that are making that question. I'm not going to pull punches there. If you're a listener that had that question, it's okay. You had a stupid moment. We all have stupid moments. Be real. Within the realm of reality, come on. They're not going to. That's like when people said the same thing with Jeff. Nothing can stop Jeff from being played.
Right. Can I just play him for free?
No.
No.
He still has a cost. Energy,
but can't I play him? Right.
No. Anyway, so here are the top lists. Here's the top four. Black Knight, War Machine.
Yeah,
this one right here to the right, this Kitty Pryde mishmash of stuff is the only one that I find to be truly unique in the sense of like, we're trying to make War Machine the card. So you have Ebony Maw, of course, and I love Crossbones in this. I tried Crossbones as well. And you have Cold Obsidian. You still have 3 1 drops, which I think is the exact perfect number for Cold Obsidian. So you still have a very good chance of hitting him, but War Machine lets you just say, oh, you can play wherever you want. And then, of course, Infinite. I like this. It's not doing too hot. I think maybe the Kitty Pryde Angela stuff in Nightcrawler might be unnecessary. And I think, but I think the idea of like, you know, Crossbones, Ebony Maw, Infinite, and War Machine, I like those. It's just, I don't think you need to build around it in the sense of like, we need to make this work.
Quite frankly, I don't like the Crossbones or the Cull Obsidian that much here. I like the Infinite Ebony Maw War Machine package, and I keep it a little bit more lean with that just as my focus in my decks. I do have a lockdown, more centric deck that I really like for him. Bringing in the Storm, I feel like gives Ox excellent utility off the War Machine, and especially if there's any location that's going to be closing down just naturally for you, those are your capitalize on games. The Black Knight decks are interesting. They're also not doing that hot, but they give you another way to like utilize the Infinite. The other deck that I actually had good success with was leveraging Goose to restrict people. Yep. And then it was just like Hope and Wave to be able to cheat Blob, or through like Hope into War Machine, cheat Infinite early, and then Taskmaster.
So,
and that was pretty good. I had Kyera to back me up on that vulnerable big boy. And it came out as a good cube stealer. My win rate, not impressive. My cube gain, very good. So could be that I just hit some favorable matchups, but I love that one.
My as you can see from a lot of these decks, this one, I tried a Shuri thing. Not great, 6 and 8 my sin cubes. But again, keep in mind, as far as cubes go, I'm staying in games I shouldn't be staying in. I'll be on stream telling like my chat, post-infinite.
You don't have to defend yourself, Brad. We know you're a good player. You could just say the deck is not great. are you going to go back to this one? Do you think think it's even worth like improving this deck?
I think there's something here. It's a solid Shuri deck that has the ability to pivot into just playing the Infinite, and it's fine. And then you can still do your Shuri float Sunspot, go She-Hulk Taskmaster stuff. You can still go like...
Those were the days. Do you remember when playing that float She-Hulk Taskmaster was like unstoppable power? Right. Now Blob just like...
I know. I've honestly even played Shuri on 4 and War Machine on 5 on top of her, and it's been fine.
Especially if you had Hope prior to that, right?
Right.
Hope, Shuri, War Machine.
Like, this is fine. This is something interesting. The Evolutionaut idea is also interesting.
The Evolutionaut I'm pretty high on, actually. I put Pixie in mine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it goes hard.
I think I want Nebula back in. I miss having all three, but then I found Magic to be very good alongside Hope Summers in this particular build with War Machine. Gotcha. I don't know. It's such a strange, like, you have to figure out. And then, like, do you cut armor? I think Shocker can be cut in this one, but like armor feels like one you need. But like, do you just do cut both of these, bring in Kyera, and then do like, what, like just Nebula, and then call it a day? But then
isn't it cut Magic, run Yimaw? Like, that's your move. You have so many scaling factors that Ebony Maw is almost not a detriment for Evolutionary if you don't find War Machine. So that's my move. Or if you want to go crazy, put the Pixie in there, which has been a high Evolutionary like in and out. So,
I definitely
go Yimaw.
This is where I was looking at it. Like, I spent a whole day trying full build arounds with War Machine. And I was like, I'm not really feeling it. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, genuinely. Like, I straight up woke up from sleeping. And I had this thought of like, because that's what happens when you play Snap all day and you stream it all day. You fall asleep and you just dream about Snap. It's awful.
No, it does.
I would not wish that. I have this with other games too. Do you have that, Teddy, where you play a game a lot and like you start finding your subconscious? Like, I'll be driving when I was playing a lot of Smite, and all of a sudden my brain just kind of goes on autopilot and I start thinking of like, I need a gank. And I'm like, why did I think that?
It's like playing a match, but it's like against itself. And so like the rules aren't quite right.
Right.
And you're like, it's just, you're caught in this mush and it's exhausting.
So anyway, I was disturbed in my slumber by Marvel Snap and woke up and I was like, what if, because we have the Sentry package, right? Yeah.
Oh,
we have Sentry, Annihilus, and Hood as a package. And we've talked about this plenty of times on the cast. That as a package is better than a build around of those cards.
Right.
It's just how it is. So like, what if we did the same thing, but Ebony Maw, War Machine, and Infinaut? Played a few games with this because I'm like, of course I'm going to put in a Darkhawk shell. That makes the most sense of like plan A versus plan B.
Well, I mean, unless you wanted to put it in an Annihilus shell, like that's your other option.
You could. I felt it was a little conflicting. I guess you could do the Storm thing still and like reaccess Storm and stuff, but it was whatever.
Storm junk deck with War Machine might have something, but I don't know if the Storm really benefits it.
But we tried this. I like how it ended up, like, I didn't do this on purpose, but it ended up having a two of each cost, and if it's nice and clean. As you can see, we did pretty good, 17-9, plus 21 cubes, 65% win rate. I immediately swapped out after like three games Infinaut for Giganto, because I think in a generic list like this, that's not Black Knight or like somebody that's playing Dracula or a way to otherwise use the Infinaut, like Evolutionaut, for example, right?
Yeah.
Giganto felt better. And very often, I would just go turn one Korg, or turn one even Ebony Maw in the right lane, and then play Medusa, whatever, you know, Rock Slide. And then four, I just play War Machine and then just slam the Darkhawk behind the Ebony Maw and be like, okay, I've been playing to the middle and to the right, throw Giganto left. And it's been perfectly fine. Now,
want to make sure that you're getting the Ms. Marvel buff on that Ebony Maw lane. So as long as you get something there at some point, you're pretty happy. I love the Legion inclusion here. I feel like any kind of location manipulation that started to get cut from a lot of the meta lists, and a lot of people are getting arrogant and running Magic. And so when you have Legion, like, that's amazing. Any kind of location manipulation.
Twice I had this happen where I played on 5 War Machine, right?
Yep.
And my opponent, in two separate games this happened, where they played on 5 with my War Machine, they played Magic. And I'm sitting there staring at Legion, Ebony Maw in my hand. And I'm like, this is beautiful.
Oh,
this is
so good.
And being able to just play a 1-7 and a 5-7 and just take away Limbo. Oh my God, that's so good. That's
all right,
so
Brett,
good.
Is there any way we can get Triple M in here? Because that's the other one that right now feels so important.
Right.
It's hard. It's like Medusa almost, but a tempo for Eliath is key. I don't know.
I feel like you'd have to change two things. I think you would cut Medusa and Eliath, take away some of that tempo idea, and then just bring in MM and then something else. Maybe you could just, I don't think you want Zabu because you're only running two fours.
Is that Crossbones or Cull then?
It could be.
It moves things, the pricing around a little bit, but I don't know.
I'd prefer...
Oh, it could just be Black Widow, right?
It could. I had Black Widow in there when I was building it, but then I cut it for just the two. I think you could go a few ways with it. I don't know.
Even like Kitty? As long as you have Hope, Kitty is like almost viable anyway, so.
Right. But then I feel really bad for not including Elsa with Kitty.
Well, yeah. So we cut something
else. Now we're just doing a different deck. Now, right. you could do a Kitty bounce style with Hope Summers, like just another little package. So instead of the Darkhawk package, you have Elsa, Angela, Kitty as your package instead of your core Darkhawk Rockslide. And then you can include MMM there. You can still keep Medusa and the Eliath and stuff, because honestly, being able to play Kitty in a six drop is so powerful.
Is that the thing is that Kitty works as like anti-initiative. I don't know. You still have to be fast as a deck. That one's a dance if you want to run Eliath and the Kitty bounce trick. But
this one we didn't do great. I only played six games. It's fun though. It's fun.
Okay.
I like it. I like the idea of it. Two of the games I lost was because I just straight up mathed wrong. It was my fault. They were winnable games. I just did the math wrong. I like this one a lot.
If you guys are just listening, it is all of the Guardians, meaning Thor, Beta Ray, Wasp, but no Lockjaw. Instead, you use Elsa as a power punch, and you want to keep all your cheap stuff on the board.
It was fun. And then I tried this back to formula list where I was like, what if we just took the old Series 1 and 2 control list and said, let's run it back. And I played
Iceman
Sunspot,
Scorpion.
Iceman,
don't you have something
Scorpion.
Better to do with your life?
Yep. Iceman, Scorpion, Sunspot,
Armor. Was that the one where
armor.
You got called a bootlicker? That was a different story.
Oh, no, that was a different one. But that's funny. Oh, I forgot about getting called a bootlicker. I got called a corporate shill and a bootlicker.
That has nothing better to do with your life than play Iceman, Scorpion.
Yeah, that's the one where I read someone say, and I got a subreddit from Marvel Snap.
Yeah,
where they're like, anytime I see someone play that, I audibly go out, get a life.
Yeah, that's
so good.
No, my life is this. My sleep is this. Listen, guys, we're in it.
Sunspot, Iceman, Scorpion, Armor, Lizard, Mr. Fantastic, Shang-Chi, Enchantress, Gamora, Spider-Woman, Leader, Doctor Doom. I'm not going to lie to you. We went 2-2, and I only played four games. I had zero patience today. But the Iceman Scorpion. Okay, I'm gonna tell you this. Game one, Teddy.
Yep.
First made it, launched it, and I was like, the RNG gods of Snap are smiling upon me because they respect what I'm doing, and they gave me first location Kamar-Taj, Iceman Scorpion right off the rip, and I was like,
Snap twice.
This is so good. Oh, it's amazing. Yep. So that felt great.
And then you follow up with Doctor Doom. Yeah, you're an unrevealed deck. You might want to play Wong if you want to get a little more greedy. Like, straight up cut Fantastic or Gamora for Wong. Pop off.
I mean, I just cut one of your interaction cards, Shang-Chi or Enchantress.
Nah, too. That's okay. Before we pivot into the future cards, who is better right now, Chi Enchantress?
It's got to be Chi, right?
It's still Chi.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at the list right now. So I
feel like Enchantress utility is going way up.
So
right
Enchantress
now.
Can hit null, but so can Shang-Chi more often than not.
The null is like the Destroy is a dance, right? I think that the Shang is like better against the Venom because then you take away the Zola. That's generally how I play it. But yeah, Shang better in the Destroy matchup.
Nothing in discard.
Discard is like you want Enchantress for the Morbius.
Right. But even then, like the power up that they can have in the other lanes with your Dracula and like MODOK and stuff.
Yeah, it's still good, but Shang's doing nothing. Exactly. And Enchantress is doing like pretty good work.
Right. Thanos, you can Enchantress Mobius and stuff, but Shang can take care of like the other stuff. So, you know, both of them are nice.
This is that Mockingbird makes it so frustrating because before you could Shang call.
That's what I'm saying. If you could, if you just make her a 6/10, I think that's a solid adjustment.
Yep.
All the Guardian seeing play now is awesome, by the way. But she Shang only hits
Gam.
One of them.
Gamma.
So there's
and
that.
Loki, like modern Loki is pretty invulnerable to it as well because they don't run Devil Dino anymore.
Correct.
So it's
so
like,
maybe they should.
Phoenix Force and pretty invulnerable to it. These are the stuff that you see at the very top of the ladder where I play.
Black Knight, so. It's probably too late for Shang.
Yeah, Black Knight's gonna be too late, and then the Tribunal, you actually want Enchantress and Patriot, you want Enchantress, and then Mr. Negative, which I'm seeing more and more of, you want Enchantress.
So I don't know if you know any truth to this, but someone in my chat said that someone asked a question on the Discord about Tribunal, and the response was that they were considering changing Tribunal to 10. Basically, the question was like, are they considering this?
Yeah.
Does Tribunal enter that phase of like, do you pump him up to a 10 so he can be Shang-Chiable? And I guess they said they're thinking about it. Do you think he needs it?
Yes and no. On the one hand, I don't like them leaning into balancing around people, including Shang as their only control card.
Right.
Like, I like that there's multiple deck types that then foster this diversity to make us think, is it Enchantress this season or is it Shang? Like, I prefer thinking about that rather than thinking they need to make it so that my Shang always works. Because I would prefer not to always have to run Shang in every deck for the rest of time.
Well, lucky for you, we got a card coming out next month.
Oh, hit me with it.
That can easily be an auto include alongside Shang to help stop Tribunal.
Go. But I guess first we have to touch on the season header, Baron Zemo.
Yeah. So Baron
we're
going to
rapid fire. We've already touched on these cards. Some of them have seen changes. So we're going to do kind of priority list for next season. And then we're going to touch on the data mines that are still subject to change, but farther off on the horizon.
Right, so
Baron Zemo. 3/5. On reveal, recruit the lowest cost card from your opponent's deck to your side of this location. Recruit is a new keyword, but it means, as far as we understand, add to. Just not using that specific verbiage. It's not going to trigger it's not like you're playing the card, but it will still trigger its on reveal and effects and whatnot.
Yeah, so it's kind of like Gladiator pulling it out, but to your side.
Yeah, so this gets really interesting, I feel like, as you look at some of the force multipliers that we've gotten. You have Yondu, who's going to destroy their cheapest card. So then you're hoping to cultivate a better pull for the Baron. And then if you do it multiple times through on-reveal multiplication, you could get some really good stuff out of their deck and actually mill them. Like, if we're looking at Absorbing Man and Grandmaster in this kind of deck, the opponent, by the final turn, might not have anything left in there, and you got it all. Like, you're pulling 5-6 costs.
Well, let's think about this curve, right? You go turn 1, Yondu. Turn 2, Cable. Turn 3, Baron Zemo. Turn 4, Absorbing Man. Turn 5,
Grandmaster.
You could do Grandmaster.
You've just played. Plus... Will they have a card left at that point, actually? Because you destroyed.
They might have one.
You count. Yeah, will you take the last card at that point?
Turn one, they drew 4. They have 8 cards in their deck, turn one, right?
Then you cut them down to 6 because you destroyed and they drew. Then you cut them down to 4 because you drew with Cable and they drew. And then you go Baron, which takes them to 2. And you go Absman, which takes them to 0. They're out by turn 4. You milled them.
Perfect.
Mill is here. For the first time in Snap. It's never been viable before. This is viable.
It might not be viable. We'll see. But stealing cards is good.
It's, but it So yeah, not that the deck will be necessarily competitive if you go all in on that. It sounds good. It sounds like it could be, just theory crafting wise. But it means that you mill them at a soon enough point in the game for it to really hurt them, is what I'm saying in terms of it being viable.
Right. No, I'm excited. And this finally gives substance to that change that everyone hated for Yondu. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to try it next week.
You could even like off curve it to be double Yondu with Grandmaster, and you've taken their cheapest two out, and then you're pulling gold with Baron Absman.
Yeah, as simple as turn one that, turn two Grand. Like, Grandmaster is weird because like I like him, but then I don't ever want to put him in my deck.
Right? No. Yeah. Yeah.
It's 2-0. Do you think he should be a 2-1? Do you think
I would love
okay?
him to have a little bit more stat line? But of course, it gets dangerous with stuff like this. That's an effect that genuinely gets multiplicatively more powerful the more times it activates. Right? Like just playing Baron for a 3/5 that's giving you something else. Well, one, I think he's overstatted. Like, this is a Loki stat line kind of thing. Like, you're happy just for the stats, and then he gives you something. But this effect happening multiple times a game gets way better later on in the game, just like doubling. But it's because the opponent's cards are getting more expensive, and also because you pull multiple of their cards, you might even activate synergies between their cards because you've pulled so many.
In all fairness, I also think he's overstatted, but so is Corvus.
Hope.
I think Hope's overstatted. I think Black Swan's overstatted.
Black Swan's a...
She's a 3/5 that makes your 1/0 the next turn. She's overstatted.
And she's nowhere. Like, that deck needs a flagship like her. So
right.
I'm okay with her. I would like to see her go back and then some of the other like facilitators around her maybe come up.
Is she not being played enough as a result of her being bad? Or is it the symptom of one cost in Zeus style decks just really hard to work because Killmonger exists?
It could be, yeah, that the counterplay is just much more fleshed out for that deck. And the counterplay to losing all your cards is not fleshed out. You are in trouble, my friends.
Yeah.
Good luck. Well, you want to have something. It might be something that you actually like start looking at, you know, that Mirage, that Agent 13, just something that you know is going to fill out your hand with something to do.
Right.
If you're going to be losing all of this out of your deck.
All right. So that's Baron Zemo.
So we love him. Gold star. But also, you know, he's the battle pass. So he's the primo card. Next up, this guy's making a huge splash. Red Hulk. People very scared of this card, Brad. 6/11. When your opponent ends a turn with unspent energy, +4 power if in hand or in play. So this is the evolved Hulk's ability, but turned up, doubled. Activated on the opponents. I love the Thunderbolt's like mirrored symmetry of other cards.
Yeah, so I'm a little perplexed by the... So for those who don't know, all these cards, Baron Zemo, Red Hulk, US Agent, not Red Guardian, but, and I guess not White Widow, and Valentina. So 1, 2, 3, 4 out of the 6 cards this month all got a little bit of a secret OTA yesterday where they got bumped up by 1 power each.
Now, the Red Guardian got like a rework from his initial data mine, and White Widow did, but really it was in the effect on her White Widow's Bite.
But Baron Zemo, I kind of get it's the season pass card, and they just like 3/5s now for some reason.
They want the new cards to land in a way that they're like making a splash in the meta. That way they get enough data to be able to tune them from there, right?
US Agent, I also understand. I don't understand Red Hulk because its effect is that it gains +4 each time. So does the +1 on its base really make it that much better? And on top of that, it goes from being a nice clean 10, 14, 18, 22, and it's a gross 11, 15, 19, 23. That's disgusting.
He's always supposed to be gross. Have you seen this card art?
Yeah.
He's supposed to just be like, what the heck is this guy? It's
going to
be, how often do you float in energy in your games?
I think it happens more often than we realize. So like, let's look at like the top list, for example. Destroy very often will stumble once or twice throughout its game, right? because you have your threes. Like sometimes you don't have Deadpool and you just like, you might just need to go like Venom on four and you have nothing else to play because you've already played your Nico X-23, but you don't have Deadpool. Or because of the X-23 give you extra energy, you are able to climb up a little bit to play something else, but it's still leaving over one extra. Same thing goes for Corvus Glaive over here with discard, right? Yep. These ultra synergistic decks, the more I play them, the more I realize you float quite a bit. Thanos, same thing.
Even with Hope.
Right. Hope as decks well, hope especially in Thanos, because oftentimes you'll be able to weave a stone or two in, right? And let's say it's turn four, and I'm like, cool, I can weave in this Jeff and like a stone, but I don't have anything else to play at the moment. I didn't draw any stones. I just have big stuff. And I'm going to play them onto Hope, so I have a big turn next turn to play a six and hopefully plus a stone or something. Or maybe you take the gamble on the Psylocke on two, like hope I get something. And then you've like floating happens a lot is my point in every deck.
Do you think it's three turns or do you think it's two?
What, like the average?
Yeah, what do you think the average of this Red Hulk is really going to be? Because so often people will float in the early turns, but also you're not always going to have Red Hulk drawn until the mid game. If we take like, try and find an average line for this guy, I draw him on turn three. Is he going to be a 119 or sorry, a 619 kind of power line?
I could see it. I think if you have him, like let's say Hyrule, you have him opening hand.
Yeah, then he's going to be big.
Yeah, but I think the
almost
average,
guaranteed big.
The average is he's going to probably be two hits on average.
Okay, so you think average is two hits, not one? Because I mean, drawing him later in the game,
I think you can pretty much get one.
But
later
even
in the game?
A 615, that's better than Giganto, and it can be played anywhere.
And remember,
and that's Blob. 615 is Blob.
And that we're only thinking about like okay, another thing. If
you
draw him,
needs one hit to be stellar.
And if you draw him on six, he's your top deck. There's still a chance that they don't play six energies worth of stuff.
He has
and especially with things like Hope, Corvus, and stuff like that, where they have seven or eight energy left over, and it's like they're not spending all of that, right? They might go like a one drop, a six drop.
Yep.
I think there's a very good chance you get like one hit at least.
Does Thanos run this now instead of Blob? Blob?
He's going to be a death knell straight up to Haivo. So I think in metas in which Haivo is a bit more prevalent, but like truly, can you tell me a reason you cut Blob? And like, don't you cut Magneto here for Red Hulk and not Blob?
Maybe.
Because
it depends on how much you like
Magneto's,
that disruption.
Magneto's 12 in deck. He's going to be 11
in
deck.
I personally will still run Magneto to annoy Brad Super.
Stop running him. Everyone, listen. If you're going to play Thanos, I want you to play Red Hulk.
The Red Hulk Thanos. There we go. Yes. Everybody nodders, guys. We got it. We're all going to play Red Hulk Thanos.
Okay.
All right. U.S. Agent. Ongoing. 4, 5, and 6 cost cards here have -3 power. So this is the little guy taking on the big guy, is the opposite of Man-Thing. The big guy lording over the little guys. I mean, great, right? Because you can pop this down on the final turn. Now, obviously, it's rarer for the opponent to stack these higher cost cards together. Mm-hmm. And it's going to hurt your cards as well. But being cheap makes it much easier to play like on that final turn to kind of surprise people, right?
Yeah. And I mean, so this was not the card I was thinking of when I was talking about being able to counter Tribunal. But now that I think about it, kind of can.
Kind of counter. Like Iron Man is brutalized when it can.
Right.
Iron Man, Onslaught, Tribunal, all taking -3. Oh.
And I really like this card. I think it's probably inevitably going to be the weakest of the month. Simply because, you know, look at Man-Thing. I think Man-Thing is a phenomenal card. I think Man-Thing is a very powerful card. But the problem is, it's really hard to find a
home.
How
did we get 6 cards this month? This is crazy.
It is crazy. But like this goes in the same deck as Man Thing. Let's be honest. Like, you want to play these together. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing, is like, you just play them together, and as long as you're hitting Luke Cage, like, there's another little 3-card package. You got it's 4 cards really, because you got Hazmat that plays pretty easy in there as well. So
do you think there can be a new Haivo list that's just trying to do like the Abomination thing, and then this card, Man Thing, all that stuff, like Scorpion? Like, does this just make that version just a little bit better?
It definitely makes it a little bit better. I don't know if it makes it better enough. Like, that deck could just run Spider-Woman kind of thing.
Right, but Spider-Woman's a 5/8.
But she's coming out at the time of game when US Agent is debuffing anything, because, like, they haven't played any 4, 5, or 6 in the early game.
But he also lets you fit in your other cards, right? So him being a 2-cost is great. So you can play him early.
You can play him on 5 alongside Luke, right?
Exactly. You can play him on 5 alongside...
And then you can still Hazmat, Abs-Man together on the final turn.
Right. You can, if you have Hope Summers in the list, you can have Hope Summers down already, and then you can play him and... what's it called?
What do you mean? What is this? If you have Hope Summers, you have Hope Summers in the deck.
Sure. Or actually, yeah, you can like just get Cyclops to trigger still by getting the extra energy. You can play him on 6 with Man Thing if you've already done stuff.
Save your caches, because you get Pegasus, Riding Mirage, and a Beautiful Jeff in this one. So
I'm actually more interested in this Echo.
If it was a card that I ever played, maybe I would be too.
I missed out on the really cool Echo in that one spotlight when she first came around, so I kind of want to.
I love that Shaw a lot, actually. I like that. I like the bust characters versus the full figure. But I mean, Echo's also a bust, so I don't know why I'm hating. Like, it's a great art. I just don't play the card.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one feels more dynamic to me, this Echo, by David Mack.
Yeah, but the Shaw, he's in a portrait. It's like a frame there. Like,
he looks like a dick.
He is. It's lore accurate.
Yeah. Good job. EOS Agent looks cool. Red Guardian. This is the one that's really going to dumpster some Living Tribunal, all right? You were talking about US Agent hitting Iron Man. Well, this absolutely hits Iron Man. 3/3 on reveal, afflict the lowest power enemy card here with -2 power and remove its text. That is going to be great for Dracula, great for Iron Man, great for just a lot of things, like that turn 1 Quinjet that Loki got, and they're about to go turn 4 Loki. Well,
Zabu.
Zabu as well. There's just so much like that just gets hit. Being able to hit like an X-23. So it's stopped.
Oh, yeah.
They
the Destroy,
cheating.
Pulling the pins out from Destroy is going to be super fun.
This great.
You could get a Morbius early on discard. Discard probably does fine, but I think there's enough utility in general on this guy that, like, I mean, heck, even if he hits Orange Stone, like, you're pretty happy about hitting Orange Stone and debuffing Orange Stone and putting a 3/3 on your side. Like,
right.
That's okay. And that's, like, worst case scenario.
I am so excited to play Control again, which, by the way, is a deck that is just gone from ladder for seemingly no good reason. The Sarah
Control?
Sarah Zabu. I don't see it anymore.
He's a 3. He could be a surfer, guys. Let's go. Everybody, as soon as a 3 cost. No. As soon as any 3 cost releases, you have to talk about surfer.
Okay. You know what? I'll humor you for a second.
It would be like him versus Negasonic. I feel like that's your choice. Do you like that? Do you like Red Guardian, or do you like Negasonic?
I would prefer Red Guardian because I think he has more application.
I do. I actually would too.
And Surfer, you don't really have the flexibility to fit in very many tech cards.
And
because
this is
like,
a tech card.
This is a good tech card.
Yeah, you don't have much of a space to run that Shangri Enchantress. You might run Rogue, but that's like not really done right now. So, yeah.
I think he's great.
We didn't talk about him much, but we really like him. Up to White Widow, 2/2 on reveal, add a Widow's Kiss to your opponent's side of this location. And the Widow's Kiss, do I have the text here? Yes, I do. It is a 0/0 ongoing. This has -4 power. Disable this ability if your side of this location is full. So they get Hold on. Is that added to hand or no? White Widow, instead of putting the bite to hand, it puts it across the board from her. So yep. Junkers rejoice. This is a 2-2 that immediately junks their side of the location.
You love
with
it.
With at best a 0-0, at worst a 0-4. So that's the thing. In like junk, you have this anti-synergy of you're almost helping them fill the location, so it'll just be a 0-0. But that's still good for junk. And then the cases where they don't fill it, it's really detrimental.
It's going to be great because they if they fill it and you just go, cannonball?
Right.
That's
no,
great.
Cannonball and junk is good. And then like a cheap way to add junk is so important for that deck.
Something even just simple like Polaris and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be great.
Now, remember, Polaris will not pull the Kiss because no. The Kiss is zero and Polaris does 1, 2, and 3, but still high synergy. Very good.
Now, I don't see the previous versions of the Widow's Kiss. It used to be something obscene. I forgot what it was.
It would debuff all the cards around it by a certain amount.
It was like a -1 or -2.
Yeah, and it was like, no way can I just spit this onto their side of the board and make it like absolutely terrible for them to live
there. And keep
there,
in mind, this is still a 2-2 as it stands. This is still bounceable. And you can
it
still...
is bounceable, baby. Let's go. So we go with the little beast. We get him again. You got two of them all across the board.
Hope you don't play
against Destroy, but I mean, that's always a bad matchup for this deck.
Turn two, Widow's White, or White Widow, sorry.
Yeah.
Turn three, you beast.
Mm-hmm.
Turn four, player again.
Yep.
Maybe
Grandmaster?
Maybe you Grandmaster as well. Maybe you Absorb Man the next turn too. Just give them 5 bites. Get some Wong action in there. Why not?
The Wong into this with 2 bites across is kind of disgusting.
So yeah, I think she's going to be fun. I think she's going to be mid, but she's going to be fun. I think
the deck is mid, but she's going to make it better.
Yeah. Well, she'll inherently be mid because of the deck. Valentina, though, not mid. Very
2,
good.
2-3. On reveal, add a random 6 cost card to your hand. Give it -2 cost and -3 power.
Ooh. So, Teddy... we paint you a picture. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
You're playing Loki.
I am.
And you play turn 1 Quinjet. You play her on turn 2. You now have a 3 cost 6 drop.
That's playable on tempo here with just -3 power. Oh,
yep.
No.
And if it's
that's
like...
before they've even triple M'd.
Yep. And
you can triple M obviously to stop this power, but
it comes out
here's
fast. The great thing. The flexibility is so amazing. Like, let's say you get a dud, right? You get a blob in a Loki list, and you're like, that's never gonna be big enough, right?
It might be. It actually would fight through the -3 power, chewing
blob
up your deck.
Yeah. It would eat everything to get to 15.
As long as you had other cards that made cards, I might play it.
Okay. Well,
like if I've got Coulson,
okay,
I'll probably play Blob.
All right, then let's say it's the Null. Okay, how about that? It's Null.
Oh, yeah. The Null's a dud. Yeah.
You can just be like, all right, I'll hold on to it, and then I'll Loki it away anyway, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
Let's think of the Hyrule. What if it's a Destroyer? A 313 Destroyer? I don't even care about Valentina and Quinjet anymore. I'm taking the Destroyer.
You got the Mega card.
Right. Like... You're just happy. And Eliath is great because I don't care about a -1. I've gotten hit by Selene plenty of times when Eliath is in my hand. I'll be
still
fine.
Playable. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll work it out.
I'm excited for this month. This is going to be great.
Yeah, any 6 cost that's like leveraging strength off of a power rather than just a stat line is going to look great.
All right.
Oh my goodness, that is the season of 6 cards. And remember, guys, the best card is, yes, Hope Summers, who becomes Series 5. By her with tokens. What's your top pick out of, I mean,
going back,
like Hope Summers is actually, like if you haven't gotten Hope Summers and you're spending tokens on any of these, you get Hope Summers, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But who's your next
like
pick?
In this, it's Red Guardian. It is a genuine answer to cards we haven't really had answers to before.
Yeah.
Such as, like I said, Quinn. Like, look, you can Enchantress a lot of these ongoings, right? Like, we're talking about, like, Zabu, Quinjet, Iron Man. But by the time Enchantress comes out, except for maybe Iron Man, the damage is already done. this is a good three drop that can come down. Yeah, yeah. You can, I guess, Zabu too, but Enchantress has, you know, the downside of hitting your own stuff.
Right.
And on top of that, the big thing is hitting just Dracula.
Yeah, just Dracula. It's enough, Iron Man.
Like, that's
anything
so
that a Phoenix Force deck is trying to set up around.
And frankly, also hitting Mobius as well against this card, because by the time you play this, if you play this on curve on three, and they played Mobius on two, you're kind, especially if you have priority, by the way. If you have priority, you're guaranteeing hitting their Mobius. But even if they discard, like they play Lady Sif, right? It's a 2-2 Mobius.
So it's good. Guardian is looking really good. Probably also my top pick. Now, for me personally, I think White Widow might be my top pick. But also, interestingly enough, like one of the ones that I'd be the soonest to say you could skip.
Right.
If you're not interested in this deck. She plays in one deck. She plays in junk. If you don't care about junk, don't get her. But if you do care about junk, we're getting her. All right, Team Junk, we're on the bandwagon. I would say that U.S. Agent, probably also the easy skip if you're more budget-focused. And that lets you hit Red Hulk, Red Guardian, Valentina, and a beautiful symmetry of having pass weeks in between all of them to accumulate your resources. So that seems just like a really good cadence.
If this ends up being the order of which we get...
True. They could rearrange, right?
They could rearrange these. Also these spotlights, as you can see next to all of them, say not confirmed.
Yeah.
We're just going based off of like the dates of which we release these, and like you can kind of tell, and it's easy to figure out. These are very likely to be true. But we saw last month, or I guess this month, where they swapped around the Miss Marvel with something else in a week.
But they did it on a patch, and so people who hadn't gotten the patch could get the old order.
Right.
People who got the patch were stuck with the new order, and there was a whole bunch of confusion.
Correct. So, yeah, this month looking great. But let's look ahead, Teddy, to the month
even farther
after.
Gaze
we're going all
into
the way
the crystal
to
ball.
It's
going to
be May.
My friends, don't blink. It's blink. 5/7 on reveal. Swap the last card you played with a higher cost card from your deck.
Can we just talk about the glow up that was this original card for the longest? This is one of the oldest data mine cards in the game,
yes,
by the way.
Blink has been around forever.
And look at the date. May of 2022.
Just recently. Boom. New card.
Yeah. 2 years, going on 2 years, and now we know she's no longer this. You can move this each turn when it moves plus one power as a 3/1. That was booty cheeks.
It needed to
garbage.
Be a 2-cost or something
awful. But now, and then it was a 3/1. Saw it the last card you played. Now she's a 5/7.
Yes,
this is going to be very good. Because it's a guarantee, because it says swap the last card to play with a higher cost card from your deck. So I want you to imagine.
I didn't find Hella, Brad. Oh no, what am I going to do? Wait.
Yeah.
I got Blink.
Especially, and on top of that, if you play turn 4 Jubilee, guarantee to get a 5 cost from your deck.
Right. You're thinning out like heck, man.
Right? That's crazy.
Oh man, Jubilee didn't pull the Infinite. Well,
and
try again.
And Jubilee goes back to the deck, so there's a chance you top deck her and then essentially
and
guarantee to like get another card.
You'll see your entire deck pass through your hand as long as
you
have board space, I guess.
I'm very excited for this. I don't know besides like Tribunal where else it really goes.
There could be, I mean, like a big card Scar deck, you
yeah,
know,
it could be.
That's kind of I've seen some of the top players playing that a little bit. Blink could modify that deck and then improve it.
Now there will be awkward times though where you like you really want to play Blink, but you just played a Cole Obsidian the turn before, right?
Yeah, where you don't want to trade that cost. You want a low power mid to high cost card to then trade for the best card from
which makes her deck building a bit of a challenge. Because I like what you're saying with like the, you know, big cards, you know, to try to make Scar work. But like if you play big cards, you want to play some of the big, well cost cards at 4. So
it could also be just like a Pixie deck that's running something like Wasp. Because I mean, you could trade Wasp for anything. That's the thing, is it doesn't say like just one cost higher or something. It's just a higher cost card. So Wasp could become the Infinaut.
Right. It's just a guaranteed higher cost.
Yeah.
And the later it goes, the more likely you are to hit your big stuff.
Well, the more likely you are to know what you're pulling from, yes.
Does she go, does she go with Thanos?
Trade this stone for the better thing. Because you'll never hit another stone, you'll hit another big guy.
Right. And if you've already played like your twos and threes and stuff, you're like, oh, Blob's coming, baby.
Blob's coming. I mean, heck, even there's a world in Thanos where you like sack a cheap Mockingbird for another card, hoping to top deck Mockingbird again, you know? Like it's, she could play in Thanos pretty easy.
All right, let's go on to the next one. Yeah. Because there's a lot of cool cards coming.
Nocturne.
Dude, I love this. Let me read this because first off, Nocturne is the daughter of Scarlet Witch and Nightcrawler. It's not from 616, I believe. It's an alternate timeline. I forgot which Earth it is. But she's the daughter of Scarlet Witch and Nightcrawler. She is a 3/5.
Perfectly thematic.
She's absolutely perfectly thematic. She's a 3/5.
Did you notice, guys, that means they added the card stats together?
Yeah. Hey, I was about to ask you, Teddy, what's Scarlet Witch's stats?
Yeah, 2/3.
And what's Nightcrawler's?
1/2.
Oh my God, that's a 3/5. And on top of that, you can move this once.
What's that?
It's Nightcrawler's
ability.
When this moves, replace its location with a random new one.
Oh my God! Okay. Which one is getting replaced? The one she came from or the one she goes to?
The one she moves to.
Okay.
Obviously. I feel like that's a given.
I hope that's what it is. I feel like it's ambiguous.
I feel like it has to be the one it moves to. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense if it's the one it's moving from.
The thing is that it doesn't say like old or new location with a random new one.
Yeah, but like it says when this moves, comma. So that happened.
Sure.
Now that requirement has been met, replace its location. So it's based on the ordering and the comma in place tells me it's where it goes.
Gotcha.
The move has happened.
Why doesn't it say after this moves?
Just in case you move it more than once.
Interesting. But after this moves, it could still happen multiple times.
Right, but after this move feels like a... I don't know.
After this move sounds more elegant if you want to
guarantee that it's... It also sounds more like one and done, almost. I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. They're probably going to reword this, I'm sure.
That would be nice.
Or they just say, you know what? Deal with it.
Yeah. Learn.
I will.
Yeah.
Here's another portrait for you this week, Celine. You going to get that one?
That Kyera looking juicy as well. Okay, maybe. We'll see.
All right. Next.
So, pretty happy with Nocturne, actually. Just like location manipulation. That's the amazing Living Tribunal.
The Ink Pulp? Oh, my God. I love Ink Pulp.
All right, Sage.
She's a 4/1. On reveal, +2 power for each different power among all cards here. What a mouthful. What a convoluted card.
What a brain teaser.
I hate her.
Okay, so guys, this is all other cards. So it's like the Ms. Marvel brain teaser, but it applies to your opponent as well for how much power she is going to get. It's on reveal, so it's not ongoing, so it doesn't scale as it goes. It just is a burst as soon as you play it. She does synergize with Renslayer. She does synergize with other on reveal synergies.
White Widow. White Widow.
White Widow would give it would be a 2.
There's
and a
your
negative
synergy,
4.
Baby.
Okay.
White Widow
into Sage?
Into Black Widow.
Yes, all
they
different
feel,
powers.
They feel
true.
Incentivized because they're already losing power in that lane.
Yep.
And they have to fill it anyway.
Sacrifice it.
To just put the Widow's Bite there.
Right?
That's the psychological aspect.
That could happen.
Okay. Is this good? No.
No.
I don't think she's good. I think any card, like you, so, okay, if you focus on just your own stuff, 3 different things, that's +6, right? So she is a 4/7. That's good. But you have to fill your lane by turn 4, essentially.
You also, you're like expecting to pick up something off the opponent here to pick up to 4/9.
So
4-9 would be awesome.
Let me think about this for a second, though.
Like, if they play two cards and you play two cards, and then on turn four you flip Sage and you hit 4-9, like, that's great.
Correct. My thinking is, I mean, if you just are there any other cards that put stuff on the other side besides Viper?
I mean, yeah, like a Goblin.
But that still doesn't.
It's one card. It was just, like, your play. Instead of being on your side, it's on their side. It is a unique.
We need power more White level. Widow type of cards that
plays to
create
both.
Something to send over.
Yeah.
Because imagine, debris,
the rocks don't count. The rocks just count as one. They're
right,
both the same power.
They're one on yours and one on theirs.
Yeah.
I wish there was a three cost. I almost wish now that the change to Black Widow was not in hand, but just to their send a negative one to their side.
Right. Oh, no, but that'd be way too good.
Would it?
Way too good. Yeah. Also, it would break up the negative one? She's nice that she blocks the draw. Like, I don't know. I like
Black Widow. Right, yeah. She's not a Dark Hawk card anymore. Cool. But she's a junk card now.
Well, she's both right now.
Correct.
What are we talking about? We're just talking about a bad card here in Sage. Like, I don't know.
I think on average she's going to be bad, but I think the games when she's good is going to be like a trick.
Yeah, so like, what do we define as good? Do we define as good being on tempo hitting 4-9, or do we find as good being like on turn 6, I'm trying to play this to a level of winning a lane? Like, she's going to solo carry a lane at a 4-12. No, sorry, 4-13.
How is she in negative?
She gets flipped into a 1-4 with the same on reveal. I mean, that's not bad. Negative right now is a pretty lean deck, though. They're just right. Like, run all the energy cheats possible, and then Wong, Black Panther, Zola. I'm tired of negative right now.
I just don't play it.
No.
I don't know. I think if you make her a 4-6, I'm sorry, a 4-7, like, if you hit three things at the minimum and make her at least a 4-7, I think you're satisfied with her.
No, you could do better.
But yes.
I think it has to be like 4-9.
But that's the thing. That has to, her floor to make her playable has to be a 4-7 above rate.
Yeah.
Like, do you need a full lane to make Wolfsbane a playable card? Or can you get away with playing it on two other cards?
Not in win. In modern Snap, honestly, playing Wolfsbane at all is like, you're not winning.
Right. So this is
ironically
like
Wolfsbane, one of my guys, I say this tongue in cheek, one of my best cards on my season recap.
I don't remember what mine was just like discard stuff. It was like
Devil
Blade.
Dino was my one of my
it
best.
It was like
as well.
Blade and like Lady Sif, and I was like, I did hit infinite with that.
Yep. It's all for me, it's always stuff that like was just a blip in testing and a really small sample size. Oh, you randomly played like three games with this and you won a couple. Anyway, yeah, I think Sage is one of those, like, she just has to exist as one of like the possible abilities that could happen. But she's not going to be a build around card, and she's probably not going to be a generally good card. She's just going to be kind of niche.
However,
and
I will be using Caches this week if this stands as the Living Tribunal Ink Pulp and the Flaviano Legion. Oh my God. I will use all four token or Caches.
They go
I don't
hard
care.
In the paint. These especially if those hands are like moving. Oh my goodness, if they're animated.
I love it.
Nomura, 5/5 on reveal. Give +5 power to each of your cards alone at another location.
This feels like
really
a deck
good.
That wants to do like goblin stuff, like Ravona goblins.
Sure.
So like turn one something, turn two Ravona, then goblin this, and then profit. Is that good?
I mean, it's basically it. It's like, it's just, you're so vulnerable to Shang, which is the number one control card in the game right now. But yeah, if you hit one card, you're a 5/10. If you hit two cards, so you have solo laners and then a filled mid, you are at a 5/15.
Well, then you want to hit things. So I think hitting Ravona, like for in this example, you go turn one, I don't know, any one cost, right?
Selene.
Sure. Turn one Selene.
That's your best one.
Sure. Turn one Selene in the left lane. Turn yep. two Ravonna in the mid lane. Turn yep. three, Goblin one of those lanes. Turn four, sure. other Goblin one of those lanes. Turn five, this in the yep. other lane. So you have one in each.
Yep.
The only one that's vulnerable to Shang-Chi is Nomura. Because she counts herself.
Each of your cards. True. She could be a 520. Oh, lordy. That's nuts.
And then your Selene's soft to Killmonger, I guess.
But she always is.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it, as long as you're hitting cards that are under the 5-power threshold, then you're not even that vulnerable to Shang.
A 2-8 and a 5-10 with a minus 3, possibly minus 6, or a minus 8, possibly minus 11 on the other side of the board in this idea, and then turn 6, like, just Eliath, and you're fine?
Eliath, Doctor Doom?
Right. Is this the card the Selene Goblins deck needed? Oddly Probably. Enough, isn't that weird?
It used to be Ms. Marvel, but Ms. Marvel now needs so much extra teamwork that it doesn't fit in, and now Nomura picks up the slack, right?
Right.
Yeah, she goes pretty hard.
I will say that line and what we're talking about is really soft to shitty locations.
Yeah, you might probably need to pack some location manipulation.
Right.
Because here's the thing, you could play Legion, fix something, and then play her on the final turn and buff these solo kids.
And honestly, even if she only hits one card, that's not that big of a deal. She's still a 5-10 essentially.
Yeah.
So Legion going up to a 5-12, for example, could be nice. Because like they're not going to expect you to like they're not. I'll put it this way, they're not going to throw down like a Shang-Chi into your Legion, right? So you don't have to worry about that for the most, unless it's Conquest and they saw you do it already. But that's a different thing,
right? Yeah, if you're playing her on the final turn, they're probably not setting up expecting it. They're trying to play around your goblins and other junk,
right?
Yeah,
and you can still just so like you just do this the goblins and just do your Annihilus Sentry stuff as well.
I think she's sneakily going to be one of her better cards.
Yeah. She does feel a bit better than I first thought when I saw her a few days ago or last week or whenever this was. I'm interested. I'm actually really...
Even if you are putting down like Ms. Marvel early, right? Like Ms. Marvel is going to go to that 9-power. You have one card on the left. You play Nomura. Suddenly everybody's buffed. Two cards not shangable, one card shangable. Then you play Doctor Doom and you fill in all the bodies you needed to get the Ms. Marvel buffs on everybody.
How do you think about her in bounce?
So you've bounced your cards back to hand. You play her on 5 to hit like Collector Bishop. Right. And then you bring the cheap cards back on 6.
Mm-hmm.
My gut tells me I don't like it, but maybe you could convince me.
Because Chris Bootman, who's like his favorite deck is Bounce, he tweeted something about like, oh, I can't wait to try this in Bounce. And I didn't really sit there and like let it digest until now. And I was just like, I could see it, but it makes my... It feels wrong in my gut. It feels like I kind of want to throw up.
But what's wrong about it? I played my one costs. I played my Bishop or my Collector on mid. Then I Beast on 4. So I have Beast, Collector, nothing. I play Nomura, and then I play the Friends.
I'm willing to try it.
Yeah.
Okay. I like her more than the Goblins, but this is...
I do too.
The most intriguing card of the month. More so...
No, we haven't hit all of them. This guy. We got... Sasquatch, 6-10, costs one less for each card you played last turn. Are you sure he wasn't tweeting about this card for bounce? Because this bounce card.
No, this is definitely the bounce card. Now you just run them both, I guess. Nomura, Sasquatch, bounce. Because this lets you actually get away with doing the turn 5, quote-unquote, feels bad of Mysterio, Hitmonkey, then.
Oh, it feels so good.
Well, it feels bad because you didn't reach the max potential of Hitmonkey.
Yeah, yeah, but with this, but with this.
With this, that feels amazing.
Sprinkled in there as well.
It makes that line feel way better.
You've already got Cull that's like wanting to play in bounce with all the one costs.
He's
and then
210.
If you got Sasquatch brought down, so if Sasquatch becomes a 210 and Cull's a 410, you're hitting him with 20 power, these tall boys after
and
you
that's,
just
that's
like,
even with, and that, hear me out.
Yep.
You could be doing like Hood. Hood loves being a bounce, right?
Yes.
And Hope can be in this list.
Of course.
And you're playing the Mysterio.
Right.
You could,
it's a lot of cards.
You could play with Hope on board. If you have Hope down and you play Mysterio Hitmonkey, you have 7 energy next turn, right? He costs 2. Cull costs 4. If you got down that demon at some point or one other card, who costs 1?
Mockingbird.
Imagine a turn where you go Sasquatch, Cull, Mockingbird.
Yep.
What?
Bounces back, baby. And that the crazy thing is you're following up on a high tempo turn 5.
Right.
So it's not like you're super vulnerable to Eliath even. You're like, you played all your energy out on 5. Normally you're gassed, and now you hit him with these. Now, of course, these cards being in your hand are going to make the earlier turns slower, but it's just going to be a matter of figuring out if it's worth it in the long run.
I mean, you can go like Hood into like a demon. Maybe you're doing like kitty bounce stuff. You can go like Bishop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just saying that like bounce, anytime something is cluttering up your hand, it's hard. Like they want to be very efficient and always be able to run. They don't float. You got Red Hulk and you see a bounce list, you're like, I got a 6-11, okay? Because they'll use every ounce of energy they got.
Maybe.
So then Sasquatch cannot be played early. You know, he can't be bounced early. He's just an endgame payoff. But how many of these endgame payoffs can you fit?
This might not be a traditional bounce like Beast Falcon Shell. This could be more
drop.
Of like a Hitmonkey like Cheerio stuff with like, you know, your zeros in like Jane Foster kind of thing. Now I know it's a little weird because like Jane Foster, your zeros, you want to be able to play all your zeros on 5. So, but you're probably writing Hope. So there will be games where you just go something on Hope, turn 4, Jane, bunch of zeros, Hitmonkey, and then Squatch. On 6.
It's really hard to do, but yes.
Is it?
Because you have to have a free card to play at the same time as you play Hope and to be able to go Jane on 4.
Oh, I mean, but in this deck, you'd be running Wasp and Yellow Jacket already.
Yes. Yeah, Wasp and Yellow Jacket, and if you beast on 2, you can Hope plus the free card on 3. So you have ways, but it's...
Yeah, maybe you don't do the Jane thing, the Jane Cheerios. You can still do like your zeros though, I think.
Yes, 100%.
Or maybe you just do magic in this list.
That'd be interesting, the bounce deck that wants magic. But it really could.
But I think the floor is what we're talked about initially, that turn 5 Mysterio Hitmonkey and go have fun.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like this guy with the energy discount, of course, is once again countered by Mobius, the No Fun Police, is in full force. You guys want to really consider, if you don't have him, you definitely have to add him to your collection, and then you want to seriously consider about adding him to almost every deck.
Ooh,
when we're looking at some
Rihanna
of these cards
Gonzalez
releasing.
Ravona. Yes.
But even if you just play 2 cards, I mean, it's a 4/10. That's pretty playable.
Yeah, Cole's playable. There you go. This week is a little weird. If it comes true, you got a Havoc variant, Ravona variant, or just Havoc Ravona if you don't have them already. The week before was Black Knight Scar, Tribunal Legion, Kyra Selene. I think the best week for cards you don't own is, funnily enough, this Sage week,
which I think the worst new card.
Yeah, I think that
do not pull Sage, but get Tribunal Legion.
Right, that's a new deck, and that's one of the best cards in the game.
No. It's definitely Nomura. I mean, Black Knight Scar.
They don't go in the same deck anymore.
But Black Knight Scar, if you don't have these guys, you should.
No one cares about Scar anymore.
Still playable, though.
Until they do the 6-10 change to Mockingbird, he's not seeing much play at the moment.
Black Knight is like a deck.
He is a deck. He is his own.
Nomura seems like she could be a deck. So that's two good cards.
Right. This is like, I think every week is pretty solid. I think Nocturne is the easiest skip I've ever seen on a card.
There's so many other cards that like do her thing.
Now, don't mistake me for saying she's bad, though. I think as this stat line and this ability,
Sage might be an easier skip.
She's going to be right. But
getting Nomura Sasquatch.
Let's think this way. Nocturne is probably going to be the sneaky best card this month because 3-5 body can move once like a Jeff, like a Nightcrawler, and be able to have location disruption. That is a jack of all trades of a card in a 3-drop, and a lot of decks really want that generic 3-drop that, you know, you just play worse stuff typically. I mean, Hope isn't worse, but not every deck wants to leverage Hope. So I think this could be the sneaky good card of the month, but it's a weak, and it's a, you know, generically decent card. Whereas the Sage week, skipping her is a bit tougher because the week looks way better with Legion and Tribunal. Right. And she's very interesting. She's Pixie.
What?
She's Pixie. She's an interesting card. She's a unique ability that
is a brain teaser, I guess, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, well, people will be like, the build around potential of like, you want different costs and nice, even distribution of
costs.
Then
I play her, and then they're going to make me, chat's going to make me play like the Grandmaster to move her and double again. And it's like, no, guys, we're not winning games. We're winning lane. We're not winning games.
Hey, hold on. You set up the left lane, right?
Yeah. And then I'm going to Taskmaster the Sage.
No.
It's better than that. I'm going to Zolda to repeat the ability. I got you.
In the middle lane, because you move her with the Grandmaster, and then turn six, you Zolda, and you go... We found our new combo deck. Let's go.
Oh, no. Chat's going to make us do it.
Living Backseat Tribunal, Gaming eat Sage. Your heart out. I got Zola Sage, baby. Zola Venom.
They're both centered. They all of those cards. All those cards synergize with Renslayer. Oh my goodness.
Oh, they do.
You could Grandmaster Zola on the same turn, baby.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It actually kind of is. Okay.
Sage is still going to be pretty bad.
Nomura is going to be good, though.
Yeah, I think
Sasquatch
cool.
is going to be good. And the best card to get this season is Zemo. Yes, as he becomes a Series 5 if you didn't already have him.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Is he? Do you think that like Zemo becoming S5 for the free to play guys is what you spend tokens on? I think so. As much as I love Nomura, I think Zemo is kind of edging all these guys out. Now, Blink looks really good, but Blink is another Battle Pass card.
Right.
It just feels so weird to say that the Battle Pass from last month is like better than everything else twice in a row, but it is. If Zemo's still a 3-5, 100%. If they've nerfed him, then maybe it's a consideration. But Zemo at 3-5 is like just get him.
So... let me go backtrack a little bit. So if I look,
we're backtracking
really quick.
We got to wrap up too, Brad. We can't backtrack too far.
We got to wrap up, but I got to look at something really quick. Okay.
What are we looking at? Release dates.
There's how many in each row? 7.
A lot.
So 7, 5. That's 12 cards.
Yep.
Since our last, so this came out in January, Meek, right?
You're trying to figure out when a S4 will drop.
There won't be one. That's what I'm complaining about. We haven't had a Series 4 card since January in a meet.
Unless they surprise us and one of these slew of 11 cards we just covered is a S4.
Right. And the last 12 cards have all been Series 5. And according to the data mines, this is 6 Series 5 cards and 5 Series 5 cards.
Yeah.
I'm not super excited about that.
Plenty of these cards feel like Series 4 cards. That's what hurts.
Honestly, this entire month of May feels like Series 4 month.
Maybe Nomura could be S5 and Blink could be S5.
I feel like Sasquatch.
But I'm putting Nocturne, Sage, and Sasquatch are all S4s.
See, I think of her as an S4, and I think of him as an S5.
Okay. Well, at least we can agree. Nocturne and Sage are 100%
absolutely.
S4 cards.
These are, this is like, please. Yeah.
Two in a row.
Frankly, can we just get a month where they're like, hey, guess what, everybody?
They're all S3.
Exactly. Give it to me.
Yeah.
Do you know how much confidence, like consumer confidence, you would garner if
you know
you
how
did
many
once a year?
Like, yeah.
Just have a month that's, here's all Series 3 cards.
Yep. How many people that had been playing the game and then kind of fell away would come back for, hey, I can grab all these new cards?
Right. And I don't think it would cost them anything. I really
People
don't.
People still going to buy the battle pass. Whale's right. going to whale.
Or better yet, what if you just put them all in the battle pass? Like you off rip, you get Blink.
There you go.
Off rip, you get like, Blink. And then like level 10, you get Nocturne. Level 20, you get Sage, et cetera, et cetera.
The free-to-play players would have a fit, but it would be a way to sell
all
the
right.
battle pass.
Free-to-play players, I think you can find the $10 for once for... 5 new cards.
Yeah. As opposed to their current threshold of like 50 to 100 for a card, that'd be amazing.
It would be amazing, but all right, that's the episode. Teddy, you have any
We're back.
Teddy, you have any final thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, we love you guys. These releases are going to be wild, especially 6-in-1 season. Oh, my goodness. I'm really looking forward to a bunch of the stuff coming out. We're going to be testing them on stream and can't wait to see your theory crafting as well, because the community always picks up on stuff that I've missed when I'm looking at these.
Yeah, I mean, both months look great. Next month looks really good. Month after looks very interesting. Not very powerful. I think next month looks powerful. The month after looks... middling for the most part, but very interesting designs.
Yeah.
It's weird. It feels like, when are we getting Firestarter, by the way?
Never. It broke something inherent, so they're gonna have to rework it, I think. That and Sasquatch would be insane. Yeah. I wanted that card. I'd fully theory crafted what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're ever getting it.
So sad. All right. Well, we love you guys. Go on patreon.com/cantstopsnap if you want to see more early stuff, bonus episodes, Thanos, Loki, a new one to be recorded soon.
Ooh.
Live recordings you can access like this right now with other people. And you're amazing. We love you. Join it for free, by the way. We are going to be doing something. One last announcement. We are going to be doing something. I don't know when. I'll have to work with Teddy. We'll have to figure out an episode in which we want to make it work. I would like to soon have an episode where, because I can choose where what posts are seen on Patreon through like what tiers and stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to do a live episode that's open to all patrons, paid or free.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Just to be like, hey, this is a benefit. Come hang out. Come see a live episode through the Patreon. And well, like I said, we'll figure out what that episode entails and like which one we're going to do it for. But it should be soon. I would say within the next 3 episodes, we'll get that done.
I'm in. Count me in.
All right. Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Can't Stop Snapping is a podcast hosted and produced by Brad Seffert and Teddy Ninja. Originally created by Michael Thurman.